This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been well documented that young people have been feeling increased levels of sadness and hopelessness for more than a decade, and that problem was only made worse by the isolation and other disruptions of the pandemic. Partly in response to that, Illinois launched a program called REACH. That stands for Resilience Education to Advance Community Healing. It aims to provide Illinois school districts with tools to support the social and emotional well-being of students. The program's a partnership with the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago, the Center for Childhood Resilience, which is a mental health service provider, and the Illinois State Board of Education's Learning Recovery Program. Here with us to talk more about the REACH program is Carrie Hogue. She's Director of Culture and Climate at the Illinois State Board of Education. Carrie, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Mashana Smith, a clinical psychologist and the Associate Director of School Mental Health at the Center for Childhood Resilience. Mashana, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
And finally, we are joined by Holly Kelly, Regional Education Technology Coordinator at the Learning Technology Center of Illinois. Holly, welcome to you too.
Thank you, Brian.
So, Carrie, can you just start by giving us an overview of what the REACH program is trying to do?
You summed it up really well in your intro there, talking about just providing supports for our staff to be able to better support our students as we've all come through this pandemic and, the effects that we're still feeling.
How did this partnership come about? How did these different groups come together?
The state of Illinois got a federal grant, and then the State Board of Education used that grant to put this all together with collaboration with REACH and Center for Childhood Resilience, the Trauma Stress Treatment Center, and bringing together all the strengths that the different organizations have to be able to offer better support to our schools.
All right, let's maybe talk about some of the outlines of the problem. I mentioned that statistic about feelings of sadness and hopelessness among young people in the decade before the pandemic. But Mashana, let me ask you, what is the story of trauma and schools in the year 2024?
Oh, wow. Great question. So I think the story can be best understood if we understood that about a year and a half into the pandemic, the largest children and adolescent organizations, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and the National Children's Hospital Association all declared that we're in a national state of emergency when it comes to children's mental health. We had been having kind of a crisis that had gone undetected, but COVID really revealed that. With that understanding, not only do we understand that, we also understand that there's a lot of data out there that shows us in national studies that about two-thirds of children and adolescents have experienced a traumatic event by the age of 16, and that manifests itself in many ways within a school environment. And so what schools are seeing as a result of this mental health crisis and the sadness and the hopelessness that you mentioned earlier, schools are seeing a lot of difficulty with students being able to manage their academics, for one, and be successful in that, but then also their attendance, discipline. And we see the effect not only on students, but we see it on teachers as well. And for far too long, we have not tended to the impact that all of this can have on teachers. We often talk about the ways in which they can be supportive of students who are experiencing trauma, but also have to recognize the way in which working with students who are experiencing trauma impacts the educators within the building and how they themselves can experience secondary trauma, for example. So REACH is really intended to support the entire school climate to ensure that it's given schools the tools that they need in order to support both students and educators as they aim to do what they love, educate our students within our state.
Yeah, and I can imagine it rolls downhill there. Holly, let me ask you. So far, we've talked about trauma and mental health. You are a technology specialist. How does that fit into what we have been talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I currently work for the LTC, so the Learning Technology Center of Illinois, and that is the majority part of the grant I work under. And then in addition, I got linked with Carrie Hogue as well. And I work also as the SEL coach for Regional Office 9, which is Champaign-Ford County.
So SEL, for our listeners, that's social and emotional learning, right?
Correct. Yes. Social emotional learning. Ultimately, how do we best get our kids when they walk in the door prepared for learning? So I always say, you know, sometimes as adults, we get to work and we feel like we've already experienced an entire full day of work and it's only 8 a.m. And many of us have those skills to emotionally regulate, to be able then to put that aside, to be able to endure whatever comes forward or towards our way with the day of work. Well, with our students, we have to be able to teach our students that emotional regulation to get them prepared, to get their minds open and ready to learn without all of those other distractions of the outside world outside of their classroom, which some of the complications happen inside of schools as well with teen relationships, for example. So when working with these two grants, I really started to see the merging of SEL and technology and found how the place for SEL, the social emotional learning with technology in both of those areas and how they impact each other.
Yeah. And I guess when you say people experience a full day before even coming into work or school, maybe it's because they've been on their smartphone since they woke up or even maybe in the middle of the night. Some. Yeah.
Yeah, that could be life. I know as our previous speaker, Aaron, had spoke about too, just sometimes life happens that makes us feel exhausted before we even start the day, right? We all experience the ups and the ebbs and flows of life.
All right, let me reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show, and we are talking about a program in Illinois called REACH, Resilience Education to Advance Community Healing. We're talking about this with Carrie Hoag from the Illinois State Board of Education, Mashana Smith, who is with the Center for Childhood Resilience, and Holly Kelly with the Learning Technology Center of Illinois. We need to take a break. If you want to join our conversation about this, maybe you are a teacher who is staying home today listening to the radio because of the ice storm in different parts of Illinois, give us a call, 800-222-9455. Or if you just have young people in your life, how are they dealing with everything that's been happening in the world? 800-222-9455. This is the 21st Show. Please stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about a program that Illinois launched called REACH. Its aims to provide Illinois school districts with tools to better support the social and emotional well-being and just the mental health of students and staff in school districts here in Illinois. We're talking about this with Mashana Smith, who's a clinical psychologist, associate director of school mental health at the Center for Childhood Resilience, which is one of the partner organizations in this effort. Carrie Hoag, Director of Culture and Climate at the Illinois State Board of Education, which is also a partner in this. And Holly Kelly, who's a Regional Education Technology Coordinator at the Learning Technology Center of Illinois. 800-222-9455. If you want to join us on the show today, 800-222-9455. So, Mashana, we heard that phrase before the break, social emotional learning. I know it's probably familiar to any teachers who are listening to us, but for those who may not have heard that before, what exactly does that mean?
Oh, great question. So social and emotional learning really gets at teaching children the skills that they need in order to relate with one another and be functional in society. It's really been coined heavily by an organization, CASEL, and focuses on five different areas. So it focuses on students really being able to form relationships, to engage in responsible decision-making, to engage in problem-solving, all skills that we know are related to life success. And what we also know is that those skills are also related to mental health and social and emotional well-being. Illinois was actually the first state in 2003 to pass and require social and emotional learning standards for our schools to embed this type of instruction within school. So we were certainly a front runner in that area.
Is this one of those things where it's always something that students needed and there just hadn't been a name put to it? Or is something different about young people today that this is, you know, a greater need in schools? How do you think of that?
Good question too. I actually think of that this is something that we've always needed. Is there a greater need for it now? Potentially, we have a lot more societal and social stressors. But this is something that we've always needed. And within the past couple of decades, has really begun to emerge, and I think continues to emerge further, which is a great thing.
So, Carrie, the REACH program has these hubs around the state. Each has its own coach. What does a hub coach do? How does that work?
Well, we have directors and coaches. one part that is, it looks different in each area. So the state of Illinois is divided into six parts plus Chicago Public. And each area has a director that basically, which is my role, like when I'm communicating with the schools and districts in my area, the superintendents in my area, as well as the connection then with REACH and the, State Board of Education. And then in our particular area, we've decided that we were going to put social emotional coaches in each of our regional offices to be a support to the schools in those particular regions.
Oh, that's interesting. So, you know, you think of Illinois, Chicago, Cairo, Shanahan, there's a lot of different parts of Illinois. They all have their own different sort of unique cultures. How do you meet schools where they are? Because I imagine the problems that the young people face are different in those areas as well.
It has been that this has been one thing that I have really appreciated about the work that we're doing is being able to not just say, here's what we're providing across the board. It has been meeting schools where they are, which then has also been somewhat of a challenge because it is so different. A lot of communication with the leaders in the school and the school districts to help us know what each particular school or building would need. And then we do our best to find what we can to support them.
Holly, I want to bring you back into the conversation. Walk us through, what is a typical day for you? You visit a school through the REACH program. What happens?
Yeah, so currently in Champaign, I'm the coach for ROE9, like I said earlier, with Champaign. And with that, we have over 24 schools that I work with that, depending on the needs, the ecosystem of the school district, it's going to be different. So working with, as Carrie said, with administrators, with teacher, all staff, the entire ecosystem, and finding out what their school needs. If it is work with professional development, if it's understanding how SEL, social emotional learning, is the plate and how to embed that in the classroom, or how to just bring a better ecosystem into the school system so teachers are happier, so there's joy in the school building and kids can experience joy in school. Kids are spending, 8 hours at school during the day, and some of the most meaningful conversations that are coming to students are from their educators with the amount of screen time that kids are using at home and on devices, and then just sleep. School is one of the main chambers for positive relationships. So how do we encourage and create an ecosystem of positivity and joy for our students to be open for learning? And that looks different in every school system, depending on what systems are already in place there and what supports they need. So really communicating with districts and finding out what they need and opened communication with them.
You know, we've mentioned a couple of times now on the show today, this idea of social media or screen time has come up in these conversations. And I mentioned that stat of the decade before the pandemic, you really saw this increase in feelings of sadness and hopelessness. And I can't help but notice that does sort of correspond with the widespread availability of these glowing little screens that many of us have in our pockets and in our palms at all times of all days. Mm-hmm. How do you, I understand one of the things you do is help people become mindful media consumers. What does that look like?
Yeah, media literacy is such an important aspect of our lives. And, as far as me being a 40-year-old woman, I wasn't taught media literacy because, media literacy came about as I was growing up and being in high school and college. And now, and with media literacy, it's constantly changing as technology is always advancing, even within this conversation. And it really is technology. It's a mixed blessing for teens because it offers very many benefits and drawbacks, as we heard earlier from Aaron, with the mental health, the correlation between excessive screen time from 7 to 9 hours between the ages of 13 and 17-year-old teenagers, that excessive screen time to increase anxiety, depression, loneliness. And there's many reasons that it could be, or the correlations, the social comparison. Social media exposes teens to very carefully curated versions of other people's lives, which can really lead to feelings of inadequacy and low self-esteem. We even see that as adults. Cyberbullying, the impact on teens' mental health and social well-being, online harassment and abuse, it has devastating effects. Sleep deprivation, that blue light, as well. And then, as we've heard before previously on the show, just the addiction. Technology can and sometimes is created to be highly addictive, leading to that compulsive phone checking, and then also disengagement from the oxygenated world, the people who are around them. And that's where that kind of trickles into those social skills, the over-reliance on digital communication. However, I will say with that, with working with the Learning Technology Center, I am always wonderfully shown time and time again all of the potential wonderful attributes that technology has if we allow technology and use technology to add value to our life rather than robbing it of their life through passive consumption. And there's a lot of schools in Illinois that are providing wonderful means of technology with the vast amounts of information, educational resources, facilitating learning and exploration, voice and choice, platforms that teens are able to express themselves creatively on, either through video editing, music production, and so many other platforms. It does allow for technology to add value. But with digital literacy, it's so imperative that we teach our students how technology can add value versus, again, taking that value away from their lives with that passive consumption. How can they leverage technology to make themselves more successful? And really trying to find that balance between technology and social emotional learning. It's a very, very fine line that I tend to walk all the time, and I go back and forth through the depths of despair sometimes, and then also, you know, the utopia of how technology can positively change lives and save lives and change our world and ecosystem.
So, Mishana, the sort of the virtual environment is one set of issues for young people, but too many also have very real world traumatic experiences that they deal with. And talking about that with young people can be so sensitive. How do you build trust with students and staff, for that matter?
Yeah, there's so many traumas. So first of all, I think what's really important is the word trauma has become almost a buzzword in recent years. And it's important to educate students, to your point, but also educators and parents, don't forget about parents and community members, on what trauma is exactly, helping them to understand, we call it the three E's, right? To help them understand, one, that a trauma usually involves an event, and that event can be something that's occurred on an acute basis. It was a one-time basis, such as, you know, being in a car accident or being in a fire or, you know, a one-time event, something that happens to you. But that event could also be something chronic, something that has happened repeatedly over the course of your life. So that could be domestic violence, for example, or sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, some more long-term and chronic exposures to trauma. We also know that sometimes that can include neighborhood trauma, community trauma. But those are events. But the event in and of itself does not mean that a child is going to experience trauma. It is often related to how that child experiences and interprets that event. And no two people will interpret the event the same way. And so that experience, if there's a prolonged period of distress, if it causes, you know, long-term mental health effects, that's when we're talking about trauma. So helping to explain and educate people is essential. There's a lot of work across our state that does that with youth mental health first aid, for example, and educating youth on exactly what trauma is. Through the REACH program, that's a big part of what we do, is educate educators so that they have that knowledge base. And once they have that knowledge base, they're often eager to begin to make changes and have school environments that are more trauma responsive in their policies and procedures and practices. But before doing that, what's really essential is that schools have an opportunity to engage in some honest self-reflection on where they currently are with regard to their policies and practices, the degree to which they may set and have a climate that can be traumatizing in and of itself, or the degree to which their discipline policies don't take into consideration a student's exposure to trauma and is actually traumatizing. So we educate staff on this, schools. We also provide an assessment instrument where they're able to engage in a self-assessment processes. What are their classroom practices? Do they have interventions available within their schools to support students who've been exposed to trauma? And also, are they forging community partnerships with other maybe community mental health partners or even after school programs? Not every child who experiences a traumatic event or experiences trauma will need therapy per se. And we will never have enough therapists or psychologists or social workers in order to see all of the children and adolescents who've experienced trauma. In fact, Illinois has a major shortage in terms of the number of child psychiatrists who are available within our state and mental health providers in general. Probably the way in which we kind of bring this is really forging relationships and partnerships with schools, with school staff, and then also getting down to the students and being in, you know, if it's an intervention, for example, the students are participating in a trauma-focused intervention, that clinician is really establishing a relationship with that student, normalizing some of their symptoms and some of the ways in which they're feeling, some of the thoughts that they're having, and then giving them the strategies, really practical tools that they can use in order to strengthen their resilience and strengthen, you know, their ability to relate to others and function within their world.
Yeah, yeah. Carrie Hogue, just a few sentences left. We are almost out of time here, but I understand this is year three of a three-year grant. What is next for the REACH program?
There is, that is correct. This is year three, and I have been fortunate to be involved in all 3 years. And then there is advocacy work going on right now to make this a part of the permanent Illinois budget so that this work can continue. It's not something we want to, having gone really hard for 3 years and then to see it just end. We want to be able to keep going and be able to keep offering support to our schools and students and families.
All right. Well, we will continue to watch what happens. Carrie Hogue with the Illinois Board of Education, Mishana Smith with the Center for Childhood Resilience, and Holly Kelly with the Learning Technology Center of Illinois. Thank you all so much for being with us today to talk about the REACH program here on the 21st show. Coming up, coming up tomorrow on the program, we are continuing our series on building a better democracy. And we are going to be talking about couples that have opposing political viewpoints. There's a study author from here in Illinois that looks about how couples consume news media and how they can navigate some of those differences. That's coming up tomorrow on the 21st show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.